All right, we are recording. We are now live. No racism.
Damn it.
Welcome to a very special episode of But You're Wrong, where we discuss Prometheus. Spoiler alert, should go without saying, but if you haven't seen the movie at this point, don't listen to this, because
we're about to go into the movie in excruciating detail.
Yes. So...
just turn it off if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, or pause it.
Love to torture yourself. Keep it on.
Go see the movie, and then listen to it. Actually, you know what? I would say take 24 hours, process it, and then come back and listen to this.
Exactly. Because it will require some thought and processing, because there's a lot to take in this movie. It's not one that you leave and you're not like, oh, I'm not going to think about that. Like, it was just an action summer blockbuster. You don't be thinking about it, because I'm still thinking about it.
Yeah, it's not really a blockbuster. But before we get into it too much, if anybody's listening to this episode first, I'm Keith.
I'm Greg.
So I generally liked it.
I did as well. And you saw it yesterday, right?
Yes.
So you've seen it more recently than I have. I would like to see it again. I saw it on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
What, 5 days ago now? And when you told me you got out of it yesterday, and I asked you for a one-word review, and I believe your one word was unexpected?
Yes.
And I thought that was a good word. Because I still don't know what to think about this movie. It was good. And by good, I mean it was very good in most respects.
Mm-hmm.
Especially visually.
Absolutely.
I thought that the 3D, and a lot of times in 3D, I feel like it's way overdone. I thought it was perfect. I thought it was supplemental to the movie, not overbearing at all.
I will admit, I planned on seeing it in 3D. I did not think when I see it again, I'll see it in... Either way, it was very visually interesting, very different. I like that they used a lot of actual sets instead of doing all CG.
You mean George Lucasifying the movie?
Yes, they were doing early Lucas.
No, exactly. I think that made for a lot of very believable sets. I mean, obviously the subject matter is a bit out there, but everything looked very believable, as in the characters were actually in these settings.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the settings go, it was... I liked it. I liked the setting. I like how it looked. I liked how familiar a lot of it looked.
Mm-hmm.
But in many ways, I felt that this led to confusion later on. I don't know what you thought, because from the outset, when I saw trailers and commercials for this film, I thought that there was going to be... Not that it wasn't connected to the original Alien, but I thought that it was going to be more concretely related. And I felt that by the end of the film, I was asking myself, why did they take so many... I felt like there was a lot of painstaking attempts to make it almost seem like you were looking at the same ship or the same creatures,
mm-hmm.
when by the end of the movie, it was clearly not. I felt like with the ship crashing, the space jockey... Being in the suit with the kind of elephant like mask, which I was very glad that wasn't actually his face, because I always thought in the original movies you see the body and he looked like Max Rebo from Return of the Jedi, minus the blue.
I was glad to see that was just the helmet too. I thought that was interesting because I think everybody just kind of always assumed it was his face.
Right. I really liked how they looked, because best way I can describe the way the space jockeys look is they look like sculptures of Roman gods, like something you would see in a museum. Right, like not even Roman people, of course, but like the ancient gods, sculptures, yeah. Marble. That's really what they looked like they were made out of. I think it gave this sense that the space jockeys were more important than human beings, like they were more evolved and like they were our creators. So I thought that was kind of a cool touch. At the same time, there was a lot of things that kept me wondering what was going on. And I guess they're talking about, you know, two more sequels possibly, which would answer a lot of the questions I have. But I guess I was hoping for a little bit more of a contained movie.
I was nervous about it being too open-ended for sequels, but they did, because they weren't sure, really, in the process of making it, if there would be sequels for it. So it is, I think, a fairly self-contained movie. It does leave a lot open, but it is fairly self-contained. I think the problem a lot of people are having that were, like yourself, kind of Alien fans for a while. I think I saw Alien, and it probably ended up seeing Alien later than you did.
Mm-hmm.
I never got huge into the universe. So I was interested when I saw this movie was coming out. But I think from the beginning, a lot of more diehard fans were expecting an exact prequel to Alien. They were expecting a lot more. There was a lot of rumors going back and forth. The first script I heard, and this is going off of something that I heard, Damon Lindelof, I think I'm saying it right, Lindelof, who kind of rewrote a lot of the script, was saying the original script by like page 30 had everything from the original movie, like the alien, the face sucker, the eggs, everything was basically in the movie right away. And Ridley Scott wasn't sure what he wanted to do with it, and he wasn't sure that this was the script that he was kind of looking for. So he sent it to Lindelof and said, what do you think about this? And he goes, well, I think we have an opportunity to do something in that universe if you want, but kind of take it in a separate direction. So the way he almost describes it is Prometheus is like the parent of two children. One kind of leads off into going into Alien and that series, and then they're probably going to take it in a different route. So we may never find out specifically what happened to the ship that they find in Alien.
I know exactly what you're saying. I think that that is kind of the direction that they wanted to go in, where they didn't want it to be so heavily reliant upon the original movies. They wanted it to kind of go in its own direction.
But that's what a lot of people were expecting.
It's not only that that's kind of what I was expecting. The problem is they showed the alien at the end of the movie in what I thought was probably the most useless shot in the movie. And I thought it was almost purely there for fanboys, for people who wanted that reassurance that it was related to the Alien franchise.
But everything else clearly relates to the Alien franchise, too.
And that's the thing. I felt like they alluded to this, they alluded to the facehuggers, they alluded to the eggs, you know, all that good stuff. All the stuff I love about the Alien series, it got to the very end, and it was like, oh, in case you didn't get it, I'm going to beat you over the head with it. And I thought I didn't like that. I mean, if I had to pick one part about the movie I did not like, it was the inclusion of that alien shot.
Really?
Like, I thought that they went through all this effort to differentiate it from the other movies, and then at the last second it was like, oh, hey, by the way, here's the alien. You wanted to see the alien. And it's like, well, by this point I didn't want to see it.
You know, that's a good point. I think part of it is, I think they wanted to put something in that one to say, this is where the Alien franchise kind of starts, so that if they go a completely separate route in the sequel and don't have the alien at all, you can still say, okay, this is where the alien kind of started.
I know.
But you do have a legitimate point. It's almost like it was kind of sandwiched in there.
And think about this. Think about how, you know, when you first saw the trailers and the commercials and all that good stuff, and there was the ship, the big round ship with the arms there, and you knew that the space jockeys were going to be in it, and you saw this kind of lifeless planet and all that stuff, and then they show the crash. They crashed the ship just like it was crashed in the first one, and it was all, they show the space jockey getting on that big turret looking thing, which I guess is actually a pilot's chair, but whatever. And they go through all this effort to basically make you think, not even say make you think, but to kind of lead you in the direction, oh, it's going to be that. It's going to be the ship. It's going to be the same space jockey, you know, all that good shit. But you know, by the end, before you ever get to that alien shot, it's not true. It's not the same ship.
Yeah.
It couldn't be the same space jockey because he gets out of the ship. So you're like, oh, this is different. This is totally different. It's related. And then they gotta throw the alien shot in. I thought it was too much.
Yeah. It was a little much. I think part of it is, I think if they had marketed it differently, because I guarantee that the decision to include those shots that really made you think that it was a direct prequel almost to Alien was a marketing decision and had nothing to do with Ridley Scott or anybody involved in it, really. It was mostly the marketing saying, well, how do we really draw in people who remember Alien but aren't necessarily kind of film nerds and aren't that aware of what we're doing.
Right.
And we show the shots that'll jog their memory the most about the first Alien movie. The thing with marketing is, if you watch, there's different trailers and TV spots for every movie specifically geared towards different audiences, because they'll recut a movie to appeal to male audiences, and then they'll recut the trailer to appeal to female audiences in the TV spots, and it makes it seem like two very different movies.
You're definitely right.
Yeah, so I think in terms of that, it was a marketing thing as to why everybody was kind of expecting something else. I mean, it's very different than what we're used to. I mean, really, the only prequels that we've seen have been the Star Wars prequels. They've gone back and told stories from before, you know. I mean, in Godfather 2, they tell the story of him coming up, but it kind of parallels with that, but it's not really a prequel.
Right, right.
But it's very different because it's not a prequel. It takes place before it. It's in the same universe. It kind of shows you how you may eventually get to that point, but it is also probably going to go its own way. So it's kind of like if George Lucas, when making the prequels, didn't talk about Anakin or any of that stuff at all. It's almost as if he was following like a different Jedi in the Council or something.
Right. Not the same subject matter, necessarily. Now, I complained a bunch about some stuff. And honestly, I feel like if you're listening to this, you're going to hear me bitch a bunch. And I actually did like the movie, but I just have a bunch of things that I had an issue with, maybe because I was such a big fan of the original movies. I think the biggest thing that really bothered me about this movie was the pacing. And I don't know if you had a problem with the pace, but I felt like everything was extremely rushed. You know what? I wouldn't even say rushed. I'll say that the pace was extremely fast, mm-hmm. and at certain points, I felt rushed.
I can see that, yeah. It didn't bother me, I don't think, as much as it did you.
For example, and this is a complaint about both the pace and about the script. When they're back on the ship, and what's-his-face, the lead male there, other than Michael Fassbender,
he was fantastic.
Oh, unbelievable. He was great. No complaints there, for sure.
And I want to come back and talk about David.
So they're back on the ship. He's already been infected by whatever David found in the cylinders there.
You're talking about the doctor.
Yes, the doctor. The main woman's, they don't say if it's her husband, but clearly they're romantically involved. It's right before they have sex. They bring up the point that she is, or, you know, she cannot give birth.
Right.
Which, I guess, I mean, is supposed to lead into the shock value when David tells her she's pregnant in basically the next scene. And I feel, A, the explanation of her being infertile is useless because her and what's-his-face have sex and she's pregnant supposedly 3 months. In the very next scene. I mean, we're talking in movie time about 10 hours. So if that wasn't going to be ridiculous enough, they had to throw in there that she was infertile, which I think did nothing for the shock value or the story. And in addition to that, I felt like it was so useless because the pace of the movie was so quick that it didn't matter. Literally, she was finding out that she was 3 months pregnant with the alien in the next scene, and the scene after that, it was already ready to come out, and she had this C-section, which was one of the absolute most gruesome scenes I've ever seen in my life.
Oh my god, that made me cringe so much. That was the part that freaked me out the most.
That scene was one of the most disturbing yet brilliantly done scenes I had ever seen in my life.
Oh yeah.
But I felt like, I don't know if maybe I felt like the script got lazy, or whether it was just a byproduct of the pace of the movie being too quick. You know, we're talking about her infertility, which has no bearing on anything. I mean, you never even had to explain that.
I don't think that information was meant to necessarily relate directly to her being implanted with the alien or whatever you want to call it, because it wasn't like the alien that we're used to. It was closer to like a facehugger, I guess. But I don't think it was necessarily related to that. I think it's an old kind of writing trick. A lot of times what they do to kind of quickly show that there's trouble in a marriage or trouble in a relationship is that they'll make it either impossible for them to have kids, or like they will have been together for so long that they haven't had kids. So I think my interpretation of it, because that's something that I learned in English class a long time ago, was that that had to do more with their relationship. Because there was obviously tension between the two of them.
Right.
But I think it had more to do showing the tension in their relationship and the fact that they weren't really in love and they were having all these problems, instead of being like, oh, and by the way, she can't have kids, so oh my gosh, she's pregnant.
You might be completely right about that, that it didn't necessarily have anything to do with the wow factor of, oh, she's pregnant with the alien, but don't you feel like it was completely useless where he was dead about 15 minutes later and she had given birth to the alien 10 minutes later? Or I forget which order it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
He was gone right after that. And really, everything was moving so quickly with the rest of the story that their relationship was such a non-issue to me.
I think it's something where it probably would have been better served up front.
That might be true, if they had discussed it earlier on in the movie.
If it had happened earlier, then...
I think mainly what I'm getting at here is that had the movie been paced differently, or, you know, had that information come up earlier on, it would have been more dramatic for the characters, and it would have made more sense to me as far as their interactions with each other. But by the point that it came out, I just didn't care. I didn't give a shit that she was infertile, because by that point, shit was already going down with the aliens, and it didn't matter. People were already, like, getting infected. I mean, like, it didn't make a difference.
Yeah, and it almost undermined his death. Like, she was acting so upset about him dying, but there was obviously trouble in their relationship.
And it's one thing if you present the trouble in the beginning and then show them working through shit, it would make his death much more impactful. But the way it worked out, he died, and I was kind of like, all right, so, well, what else is going to happen? I'm more interested in the alien, you know?
One of my complaints, which I actually just today was thinking about it and kind of changed my view on it, was originally I was thinking that Charlize Theron's character, I can't remember her name,
Nix? Was it Captain Nix, or...?
No, well, she wasn't the captain.
No, she wasn't the captain. I'm sorry, like, Lieutenant. Something Nix, I feel like.
Whatever she was. She was like the Paul Reiser role, apparently.
Yeah, that piece of shit.
But I originally thought that her role was kind of useless.
Mm-hmm.
But then the more I was kind of thinking about it, it's interesting because the movie is it's a more thinking movie than Alien was. It examines more themes in terms of existentialism, existence, relationships between creators, both gods and actual creators and parents and things like that. So I think actually the Charlize Theron character actually helps. I'm going to see if I can look up her name too. Helps that, because it's interesting. You find out that she's Guy Pierce's or Waylon's daughter. She calls him father.
I assume that they are father-daughter.
Right. And people were wondering if Meredith Vickers is her name. People were wondering also because Idris Elba, Janik, the captain, calls her. It says, are you a robot? Because of the way she acts. And she calls her father. And it's very interesting. But I think, I was thinking about it, and I think that she's not a robot, but she wishes that she was. Because Guy Pierce says, or Waylon says, David is the closest thing he'll ever have to a son. And he has that relationship with David. And he doesn't seem to have that relationship with his daughter, either because her last name's different, and I get maybe she was out of wedlock or something like that. But she's wanted that relationship with him. So I think she almost acts more like David and like a robot to try and gain his acceptance.
I mean, you can see with the way she acts, very cold, very calculated, and at her father's command, no matter what. And yeah, I see what you're saying, where she acts very robotic.
She acts very, because she's assuming that she's trying to get his acceptance.
Right.
And then the other interesting thing is, I think then David almost tries to act more human to be like her. Because it's a weird thing where I think they're almost brother and sister, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to act like each other for the parents' approval. And it made me wonder if, because in the opening sequence, or I should say the opening sequence with the ship after the title sequence.
Right.
There's that opening with the jockey, we'll say. He looks like he's dying his roots.
Yes, you're right.
So that made me wonder if he was built to not actually be blonde, but then he dyes his hair blonde to look like her and to be more like her.
You know, I did not think of that, but that actually, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and then that brings up another interesting point, because Waylon says that he will never appreciate the gifts that he has because he doesn't have a soul. But the fact that he does that, and it's almost a vanity thing, shows that he does kind of have a soul, because to be vain, I think you would have to have a soul in order to do that.
Right. The way I always think of it is that to actually care, you would need to, I mean, it's human to care about things that don't necessarily have material value, such as the acceptance of a parent. He even shows that in other instances, such as when he's talking to the male scientist there, the main lady's husband or whatnot, and she, and David says, oh, you know, what are you hoping, or why did you make us, or why did you make androids, you know, basically.
Yeah.
And he says, because we could. And he's clearly upset by it, you know, despite being a robot, and yeah. He says, how would you feel if you found your creators thought the same about you?
That's a beautiful scene because of that line, but then also just watching his finger that entire time.
Yeah, because you're just waiting for him to do something, to infect him.
And as soon as he makes... Actually, isn't it as soon as he makes that comment, he puts his finger in the glass?
It was right after. It was immediately following. It was kind of like David went in. He knew that he didn't like this guy. And he sized him up, and basically he made sure that this guy was kind of a dick, which he was, or at least he was a dick to David, and decided this is the guy that I'm going to infect because he deserves it, in his eyes. I found it interesting the way that David acted so robotic in many times, like even just the way he moved, he acted more robotic than the androids in the original films, because Bishop and I can't think of the guy in the first one, what his name was.
Was it Ash?
Ash. Ash and Bishop seemed much more human-like, and I guess you could attribute that to advances in technology, making them act more human as far as like their mannerisms and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
However, David had much more of a personal, you know, he had a belief system. He had almost like what you would call a soul, because he valued things that could not be touched or seen, such as acceptance or love or whatnot. It was interesting how they did that. and almost to a point, I'm not even 100% sure what they were trying to get at by doing that. I mean, maybe it's something I'll have to think about more in the context of the whole film, but I found it very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the movie is one of those movies where, first of all, not everything is spoon-fed to the audience. So I think what some people see as plot holes, or some people go, man, this is too confusing. If you try and think about it a little bit more, things start to clear up a little bit.
Right.
But it's also one of those movies that isn't going to ever give you distinctive answers on what's what in terms of kind of the theme, because they want you to think about the themes of existence and what it means to have a soul and things like that.
As far as that stuff goes, as far as the concepts go, it is one of the most multidimensional films I've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because the first half of this conversation, I sat here bitching about stuff, but a lot of that is cosmetic or more movie type ideas rather than actually talking about, you know, the actual ideas behind it. That stuff, to me, the movie more than made up for any lack of, you know, bad pacing or adding shots that weren't needed.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I do like the movie a lot.
Oh, yeah. There's supposedly a lot of stuff that was also left out, too. Like, stuff that was, I'm sure, left on the cutting room floor, but also stuff that was written in the script or that they came up with as backstory to people that wasn't even shot.
Right, I bet there was a lot of it that was never filmed just because there was no way to really put it in the movie without making it 10 hours long, you know?
Oh, yeah. I think it's very different, than anything that we've seen recently.
I would agree.
I can't remember the last time I watched a movie in a theater, really, that something new that really made me think as much.
And I think it was impressive how new a lot of it was, despite its relation to those original Alien movies.
And I think that goes back to what I was saying before. I think initially that's going to be something that almost hurts it. People were expecting something different. But I think that it's something that over time will work out in their favor.
You know, it's stuff like that is why I've always loved the Alien movies. And this movie is another great example, is because the first two Alien movies are legitimately awesome movies. They are good films in addition to being entertaining. And although this isn't, you know, like we said, it's not directly related, it's still in the same vein. And it's just one of those things, like, you can talk about people like monster movies, or people talk about, like, say, you know, the Predator movies. And I mean, when you get down to it, the Predator movies are not good. I mean, the first one is obscenely entertaining, but none of them are really good. But the Alien movies, you know, I'm obviously leaving out 3 and 4, especially 4. And, you know, 3 isn't all bad. The director's cut is actually pretty decent. Regardless, I mean, there's some great stuff in the Alien movies. And I felt like Prometheus, especially with its concepts, was a really good supplement to those. Or you know, even a companion to them, really.
Yeah, I think what separates it is it follows what you were saying. It goes a lot deeper than the other two.
It does.
Than the first two. And I think that's something, again, that's just going to be kind of off-putting.
I think so. And I think in certain instances, the movie doesn't necessarily help itself. It doesn't help its cause when it comes to separating it from what the expectations were. I felt like sometimes it tried to lead you in a direction, and sometimes it tried to stray from that direction. It was a bit confusing because of it, but you're right, the expectations of it definitely doesn't help. Say someone like me who is really into the original movies, but, and I'm kind of tooting my own horn here, but isn't as educated in film or something, say, they're going to probably be pissed off, and they'd be sitting here saying, well, I didn't really like it, when there's plenty to like about the movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I want to get your impression of the actual opening scene. Was that Earth?
I think it was. And I think what happened, I mean, this is my take, accidentally, we were created in the likeness of the Space Jockeys. I think that eventually they realized what they did. They probably had no idea how it happened. I really don't even get how that guy died. Like, it doesn't make any sense, but regardless, I think they realized what was going on, and they probably went back to Earth every so often, checked in, and for one reason or another, eventually decided they needed to put us down. That's kind of what I get from it, but I do think it was Earth.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I do too. I'm gonna send you something. I saw this image on there. And when we release this episode, I'll put it up on Twitter at BYW Podcast. I didn't put a subject or anything, but it should be coming your way.
I'm sorry, I don't accept emails without subjects.
You personally, or your Gmail doesn't?
Oh, no, me personally. I've just got something against it.
Oh, is that why when I email you at work, you never get it?
No, that's because, you know what, I'm not getting into work. So I think what we got here is Space Jockey plus the Black Ooze creates Man and Woman.
Which would be, I think, the opening scene then.
Right. Now, Black Ooze plus Man equals Dead Man. That's what I take from it. Or Infected Man. Infected Man plus Woman equals Alien.
Well, I think it creates that squid thing.
Right, okay. Which... Well, I guess that's like the facehugger. The original evolution of the facehugger, because that eventually turns into the giant creature that kills, or not, well, infects the space jockey.
Right. And then that plus the space jockey creates the alien.
Right.
Now, I kind of agree with this idea, but here's where I diverge slightly. First of all, what becomes the original facehugger is too big.
Right.
But my thinking is that maybe, this is my first theory, I should say, that one of these facehuggers or something maybe like the Black Ooze with the worms that was also kind of a facehugger that infected the biologist or the geologist or whatever was also kind of a facehugger. The facehugger infects it has to shrink down somehow. And the alien that we see pop out at the end isn't the alien that we're familiar with.
No,
I'm thinking there's a couple more steps in there where maybe another facehugger is created that interacts with the alien that we see at the end. And then maybe creates an alien that we're a little bit more familiar with.
The only issue with that is that it has been said before that the alien takes on a portion of whatever DNA its host is. So the alien that's produced from a human host is what we're used to. The alien that's produced with the space jockey host is similar, but a bit different.
So at some point in that scope, a facehugger is produced that infects something that creates an alien that will create the one that we're a little bit more used to.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it's probably an evolution if you think about it, because the facehugger needed to be bigger and stronger to infect the space jockey than it would need to infect a human, because humans are much more fragile than the space jockeys are.
Right.
Despite having many physical similarities. I mean, I can only imagine that the facehugger that we've seen before, that in fact humans are an evolution that are more apt to attack smaller creatures such as humans.
Instead of something like the space jockey.
Right. The space jockey was fighting that thing off for a little bit.
It was. That's true. The thing about it now, that's another problem that I kind of have with it, because in order to grow from that small thing that came out of her stomach into that monstrous thing, it needs a lot of energy to increase to that size.
Right.
But then again, I mean, we're dealing in this kind of universe, so I'll put that aside. That's kind of a nitpicky thing, but I'm not entirely sure the science would work on that. But my one problem with kind of this saying that the giant facehugger and the jockey create this other this alien is that if you go back to when they were first in the room with the giant head.
Right.
The Dr. Holloway is in the back. He's looking at not a painting. It's more of like a carving on this one, but he's looking at the carving and it looks like an alien that we're used to and like the one that comes out at the end.
Yes.
So I don't know. Well, unless that is almost like a warning to the space jockeys and whoever that this is what will happen to you. Because if they've experienced it before,
they know the aliens.
Yeah, if this black ooze has incorporated with some other creature before, which it potentially could have, and then infected one of the engineers, then they could know that something like the alien will come out. That's one possibility, but maybe there's something a little bit more going on. I guess that would make the most sense, though.
It is a bit confusing. It's that is absolutely not clear. Another thing, when you were talking about the growth of the creature, and that's actually something that has happened in previous movies, because, I mean, if you remember in the first Alien, that creature comes out of, I forget his name, Kane, I think, at the dinner table, and within hours, it's huge.
Oh, that's true.
And the alien species, and it's funny because I actually have read some explanations, people trying to kind of talk about how it would work. Basically, they've always grown exceptionally fast. And I think it's kind of, they kind of took that idea that, oh, that's okay. We'll do it again in this movie, you know? We'll keep that similar.
That's a good point. I didn't think of that. That's true, because it does grow to be pretty large by the time that I know it's like Harry Dean Stanton is the actor.
Yes, yeah. What's his face with the baseball cap?
But by the time that it gets that guy, it grows from being just this little creature the size of a kitten to
it's
something much larger.
7 feet tall by the point he finds it.
Or when it finds him.
Yeah, and I agree. The whole idea, it makes sense that they've probably seen the aliens before, but it's a little bit tough to wrap your head around. You know, they're carrying the black ooze, they have this, it's basically a biological weapon.
Mm.
And the space jockeys have some sort of a control over it, but then again, I don't know, it doesn't seem like they really have control over it. I mean, they find so many dead ones. Clearly, it's kind of run amok on them.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe that's supposed to be kind of a commentary on weapons or, you know, any sort of a thing that we can create that might get out of hand, that we can't always control, everything that we create. And I mean, I think that is a big part of it. The space jockeys can't control everything that they created, even though they are so advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And,
which is a nice feed into the fact that now a human is going into or wants to go into their territory and basically find out what's going on or destroy them.
Right. And those are really the only two options.
Accompanied by an android, which her people created.
Exactly.
Who also then ran amok because he infected her husband or boyfriend or whoever.
It's a lot of interesting, there's a lot of interesting ideas, which is why the movie is so good and so worth seeing.
More than once, too.
Right. I'm going to definitely have to see it again. I mean, it's by no means perfect, but the concept behind it is so vast and so interesting that it'll easily keep your attention.
Okay.
You know.
It's a much deeper movie than I think most people are expecting, and I expected on the beginning of it. I wasn't expecting something. And the more you talk about it, the more you think about it, deeper down the rabbit hole you go.
Thank you, Morpheus.
No problem. Now, one thing that I thought was interesting, kind of lightening it up a little bit, is I thought it was really interesting that they cast Guy Pearce as Wayland.
I almost found it distracting.
A little bit, because the only time you see him in the movie is as an old man.
Right. Even though they had those web commercials prior to the movie of him as young Waylon.
Exactly. That's almost the only reason that they cast a young man in that role, was so that they could do the viral marketing to begin with. Unless in the original script they had more scenes of him as a young man, they had more of a backstory on him.
It's definitely possible.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that could have easily been written in or could have easily been filmed and left out. But based on what we've seen, it's almost like they just did it for the marketing.
Right, and that's exactly what I was thinking, because when I saw the movie and saw that you only see him heavily make-upped and all that good stuff, I was like, they really didn't need Guy Pearce to play this role.
No, they could have got Wilford Brimley or somebody.
You're right. I also found it funny that I thought him, you know, Guy Pearce as old Waylon, looked quite a bit like old Biff from Back to the Future 2.
You know, I didn't think about that, but he did.
Yeah, there was definitely a resemblance there.
It would have been better had he said, though, at some point, say, I had your mom pull me.
Yes, yes.
Now, the only other problem that I had with kind of the movie, and this is kind of like, and I don't know if I mentioned it, there are things that characters will do in movies that don't make any sense to me, that don't seem logical, and that really bother me. Like in the Avengers, when Nick Fury pulls out that bazooka and shoots down that one plane, and then there's another plane that takes off, so he pulls out a gun, and he's like, I'm going to shoot this plane down with my handgun. Oh, wait, I can't do that. And then he puts it back, and I'm like, why did you even pull it out to begin with? Like, did you think that was a valid option?
No, you're right. You're right.
So in this movie, when the ship starts to crash, which, by the way, I was reading an article about this morning about a bunch of things that people loved about the movie. And one of the things is that the minorities didn't die until the end. And I thought that was very funny.
That was something that they liked. I mean, they still obviously died.
But when they crash into the ship and the alien ship is coming down, it goes on its side and it starts to roll. When it's laying normally, it's not a very tall ship. So when it's on its side rolling, it's not a wide distance. But in order to escape from this thing, everybody just decides to run in a straight line,
along the line that it's rolling. I was thinking the exact same thing. And then finally, the girl got the bright idea to just walk sideways and avoid the thing altogether.
Right, and then it started to fall that way. Yeah, yeah. That makes a little bit more sense. But Charlize Theron is just running in a straight fucking line. And I'm like, why don't you just turn? It's like chasing an alligator. You just do a zigzag pattern and eventually it'll stop.
Right. Right. And she was very cool and calculated the whole movie until that point where she just acted like a complete dumbass.
Yeah, in order to escape, she freaks the fuck out. I mean, maybe that's just because she saw her father die that never accepted her.
She was a little bit, I don't know. She was an emotional wreck, maybe.
Yeah. And I was doing a bit of reading on it this morning. I was reading part of an interview with her. And the other thing, kind of going back to, like, what we were saying about having the real sets, some of the CGI stuff, and some of the filming even, they had done prior to certain scenes so that when she's looking at a monitor, they actually are playing back on that monitor what they created. So she's actually seeing, like, Waylon die when they film that scene.
So she doesn't have to pretend
that she's seeing
to, it. Right. And that's cool. That's really good. Because I feel like when you, especially, you know, like the new Star Wars movies and all that stuff, I feel like it's got to be, you know, even if you actually had good actors in those movies, which they didn't, but even if there were good actors, it's got to be tough to react to something that's not actually happening.
I mean, I can't imagine doing that. I mean, some people have done it well, like Planet of the Apes or Rise of Planet of the Apes.
Right, right.
They did a good job kind of responding to some of that. But the best seems to be, like, even in that, they had
Andy Serkis.
Thank you. Had him basically standing in, so that the actors had somebody to interact with. In the Avengers for the Hulk, they had the Hulk mock-up. So you have to have, if you're doing CGI, you have to have something so that they know.
even if it is ridiculous, it's something.
My girlfriend was watching The Smurfs, and there's a couple of parts where Mr. Doogie Howser starts to hug the Smurfs, and they're climbing on him, and he's trying to supposedly hug them, but they don't match up with where his hands are.
Ugh.
So if you're paying attention to it, it just looks weird.
Oh, well, I was going to say, was it true or was it not true that he got an erection when Papa Smurf gave him a hug?
They didn't. It was all shot above the waist, so I don't know.
Ah, damn it. I was really looking forward to that.
I don't know. There was actually, towards the end, there is what I call the Greg Smurf.
Oh, yeah? Was he, like, pinching asses and stuff?
No, he was clearly meant to be Italian, and he had a tattoo on his arm.
Ah, oh, nice. Gold chains?
I don't think there was a gold chain, and I'm trying to remember what he said, but he said something kind of in, like, a little bit of Italian accent. And I turned to Rich, and I go, was that a Greg Smurf? And she goes, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was.
Awesome.
So I was trying to find a picture to send you. But the CGI in this was really well done. In Prometheus, not the just to be clear. The acting was fantastic. Again, I think Michael Fassbender was just phenomenal. Because he was great in Inglourious Bastards.
And he was also great in First Class, despite the accent swaps.
Yeah, if you just kind of ignore that. Even the captain, Idris Elba, was better than, I think, a couple of the main characters.
Definitely agree. And we talked a lot about Charlize Theron's character, but I also have to say she was also excellent in the movie.
She was. She had a lot more going on. She played it, I think, pretty well.
Yeah.
Maybe she is supposed to be a robot, but I don't think she is, because I think it adds more to the story if she's not.
Right. Definitely agree. Agree on all fronts.
I think that covers everything.
I think once I see it again, I think once you see it again, I'm sure we'll have more to say about it. After seeing it for the first time, like, I can really take in all of the visuals. I can take in the performances and whatnot. I can go and really look into the whole mythology of it a little bit more, look at the explanations for some of the stuff a little bit more. All right.
This has been a very special episode of But You're Wrong. I'm Keith Bordella.
I'm Greg DiNicola.
And we still don't have a sign-off, but join us again.